I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up in hands. They believe in it. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. But you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a hard and dying heat. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. Today I'm going to be playing a talk I gave in Vancouver just a little over a week ago called Jailed for Jokes. And this is a talk I gave to Brian Rue's group in beautiful Kitsilano, Vancouver, just a week ago. And this, of course, is up on BitChute and on the widely available.
Welcome to Brian Rue's show. It's August 29th, 2019. My guest is Paul Fromm, director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, and he's here in Vancouver at my regular Brian Rue show group meeting, so it's an honor to have Paul Fromm here for the 137th time. Okay, good thing I could edit, right? I didn't say anything.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. I want to thank all the Brian Rue supporters for coming out here, and we're making a circle, and I think a lot of interesting things to discuss. I suppose what's most on people's minds these days are the ongoing onslaught on freedom of speech. And practically, there's an issue every couple of days. So I'm going to start off with what happened today in a Toronto court. Judge Richard Blouin sentenced Leroy St. Germain to a year house arrest, and that he was the publisher of the satirical paper Your War News. Now, somebody online referred to it today. I thought that this was very good. Basically, Leroy and editor Dr. James Sears were found guilty under Canada's notorious hate law for telling jokes about women and Jews. And this is something that was glossed over at the trial. The Your War News is satirical. It's not a political manifesto. It's satirical. It's funny. Anyway, Leroy got a year's house arrest, which means he must remain in his house except for visits to his lawyer, doctor, or I think he could go to church, and 4 hours a week shopping. Well, we don't think this will last, and I'll get to that. Last week was a much more serious day for freedom. Dr. James Sears got the maximum. The way the Crown proceeded under the Hague Law was that they proceeded by what's called summary conviction, which is a less serious way. They can go by summary, which means you don't get the right to a jury trial, but the sentences are lower or less. Or they can go by indictment, which means there's a preliminary hearing. You can ask for a jury trial, and the sentence of the penalties are more. And under this provision of the Hague Law, a summary conviction would be maximum 6 months. Indictment would be 2 years. So the Crown chose to proceed by summary. The judge in January found Leroy and Dr. Sears guilty of willful promotion of hatred against women and Jews. He said if anything was hate, this was it. And I thought, boy, you haven't read much, Mr. Justice Richard Blumen. Your news, first of all, is funny. It's satirical. It's not, you know, dripping with desires to maim and murder and destroy people. But anyway, that was the judgment. And over the spring, a series of really creative moves, which would probably take us all evening to go through, Dr. Sears appeared, I think it was 4 times for sentencing, and each time dodged the bullet. And what he did is he came up with an obscure procedure that is more common in American law than here, and that is to allocute. That is, the prisoner gets the right to offer his opinion. He's being found guilty, but he has a chance to make a statement. Now, normally, what Dr. Sears called allocution would be something like, you know, I'm very, very sorry, I let my mother down, I let my parents down, I'm very sorry, okay, or something, I apologize a little bit, or something like that. They're very brief and very modeled. But Dr. Sears came up with 72 pages of in-depth critique. I'm going to summarize it really briefly. What was arguing was that there should be no sentence at all, that he should be given an unconditional discharge. Yes, he was found guilty, but there will be no sentence. And the reason he said that was, among other things, he had some very complicated reasons, but what I thought what was one of the most creative was this. Your ward news is an important safety valve. And because the mainstream media is basically the false news and the fake news media, and all sorts of points of view, including ours, are regularly totally excluded, or if they're mentioned at all, it's only in terms of trying to demean us and defame us with a lot of weaponized words, you know, the neo-Nazi, white supremacist, anti-Semitic, and a few other ones. And he brought with him a fellow we call Jonathan. Now, Jonathan's a blind man. Now, Dr. Sears had managed to negotiate just before a break that afternoon that he would get a chance to say a few words. The judge would let him read his 72-page statement. He was giving him about 15 minutes. So, at the break, in came Jonathan, along with a fellow who led him, like this. And Jonathan sat right down beside me, and he started in a very loud voice to sing a very obscene version of the national anthem. I thought, who is this dude? And then he said, if you want to get pleasured, go to a whorehouse. If you want to get fucked, go to a courthouse. Loud enough that the court heard.
Holy cow.
Oh yeah, then Jonathan's irrepressible. So Dr. Sears introduced, and this is my friend, Jonathan. Jonathan had lost the sight in one eye, and then he began to develop a cataract. And he went to an eye doctor who turned out to be a butcher, and he blinded him. So now Jonathan was completely blind. Jonathan went to the media. Nobody wanted to hear him. He went to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. Nobody was interested. He went to the College of Ophthalmology. Couldn't get anywhere. So he told Dr. Sears, who at some point along the line had met him, I've found acid. I'm going to find that. I won't tell you the other words he used. And I'm going to blind him for what he did to me. So Dr. Seal said, well, Jonathan, that's going to make your life even worse. I mean, you'll end up in jail and et cetera. He said, I'll write up your story. And he did. And Jonathan now will stand at street corners handing out photocopies of the story that appeared in your War News, and he's no longer talking about blinding some scumbag of a doctor. So, and then he said there are a number of examples, but there's one other that was particularly interesting. There was a Palestinian fellow in the East End of Toronto, and he was really angry. He said some Israeli soldier, sniper, had crippled my cousin. Now he's basically a basket case. And he said, I'm going to get spray paint or something. I'm going to go to a synagogue and I'm going to write fuck the Jews and swastikas and liberate Palestine all over it. And Dr. Sears said, well, that probably if your car will end you up in jail, it won't do much good. I mean, they'll just sandblast it away after they can boo-hoo for press photos. So in the long run, it won't accomplish much, and if your car will get you into a lot of trouble. He says, I'll write your story. And he did. And the Palestinian felt, at least somebody had listened to him, and he had gotten the story out. And Dr. Sears said, basically, we're a public benefit. Now, this is an amazingly creative way of going about it. The first time, I think, or maybe it's the second time you're supposed to be saying this, it was on the Thursday before Greek Orthodox Easter. Greek Orthodox Easter is 1 week after Western Easter. And Dr. Sears said, if your honor chooses to put the handcuffs on me, it will be a little bit like what they did to Christ, because traditionally the nails went in the wrist, not through the hands, because there's so as you know, there's so little tissue or flesh here, the hands were ripped, and it was pretty gross stuff. But anyhow, Christ traditionally, the Roman prisoners were crucified through the wrist. They said, just like my Lord and Savior. But he said, in 3 days, by Monday, my lawyer will be in court, and I will be out on bail, and I will let Christ rise again. Well, the press didn't know what to make of this. I mean, only Dr. Sears could put this over. If I said this, I would sound like a megalomaniac with a Christ complex, or probably a guy who couldn't keep a straight face. I mean, I've had trouble delivering. It was just, the press didn't know what to make of it. And of course, they're furious. He's supposed to be off to jail. Anyway, there are a couple more maneuvers. And then finally, beginning of August, the judge said, by this time, Dr. Sears had fired his lawyer for massive incompetence, for actually having thrown the case. And I had a bad feeling all along. I don't want to say I told you so, but when you're in the middle of something, you sometimes don't have a big perspective. But I've been through a couple of cases of trial, I hate law trials, and what you must do for effective defense is the Crown is very predictable. They'll have a couple of experts who will say that the words there were, anti-Semitic or misogynistic, anti-feminist, etc. That would be predictable. And then, if you're going to counter that, you have to have experts that are going to say, roughly, no, they weren't. Or probably more accurately, they are true. And that's one of the defenses under the hate law. And that's what we did with Arthur Topham. One of the expert witnesses was Gilad Axman, who describes himself as a recovering Jew. And what he was trying to explain was that the criticisms of Judaism contained in the radical press were essentially true, okay? The other expert witness was Dr. Michael Persinger, who talked about the nature of hate and was arguing that what's sometimes called hate is really just debate, and far from being bad, is good. Because he said they're usually true reactions on the part of a group that's criticized. Either they brush it off as, this is nonsense, this is ridiculous, which is good, that's healthy. Or they say, ooh, I want to form a committee, we're going to answer those charges, we're going to put up a website, we're going to answer it. And that's healthy too. So hate doesn't destroy society, I mean, so-called hate. Now, that was the defense. And I would say, baseball, we'd be batting 500, which is pretty good. Arthur was acquitted on one charge and convicted on the other. But the Dr. Sears' lawyer refused to call expert witnesses. And Dr. Sears had already lined up E. Michael Jones. Now, E. Michael Jones would have been able to answer both the charge about hate against women and about Jews on the basis of his extensive writings that much of what Dr. Sears said was true. And there were other witnesses, expert witnesses, that were not pursued. I told Dr. Sears at the time had to be pursued. You have to have somebody, a preferably retired professor of English literature, who can explain to the judge what satire is. And satire has a different impact than the words would otherwise. For instance, one of the most famous examples of satire in the English language is Jonathan Swift's essay, A Modest Proposal. And this was that one way to solve the problem of the starving Irish children and very, very poor Irish people in Britain would be to encourage cannibalism. If they ate their own kids, there would be fewer kids, and they would be better nourished. Now, this was not a blueprint for genocide. This was a witty poke in the ribs to a lot of the English upper class. Maybe we should, do things to take better care of these poor people. This was a poke in the ribs. This was not, blueprint for Auschwitz in the 18th century England.
And he wasn't charged with hate speech at the time.
No.
He wasn't. Satire.
Yes. Well, in my opinion, that was what ought to be done. Anyway, Dr. Sears was then allowed to make, he could make the argument that because of an utterly incompetent representation, the judge should declare a mistrial, and then we would get a new trial. But before he could, along with that, but arguing that, we also had to come up with a list of expert witnesses, because Dr. Sears is saying, he blew the defense. And Dr. Sears had all sorts of emails between him and the lawyer, Dean Embry, where he was urging him to call an expert witness. I've got an expert witness. No, this goes against my own, this witness's ideas would go against my own personal philosophy. This is not what we'll do. And just to establish how badly the case was blowing, the defense called no witnesses. The only time that is a good strategy is in what I would call an identification case. Let's say Brian Rue is arrested for having held up the TD Bank down the street.
How do you know so much about my life?
I got a message in my filling from it.
Okay.
Satellite in space. Anyway, he's put on trial for armed robbery. And the problem is nobody at the scene of the holdup can identify Brian Rue as the fellow in a mask. And no loot was found on Brian Rue. The offending weapon was not found. In fact, they can't identify Brian as having been involved at all. Now, in a case like that, the defense might well call no witnesses and say, Your Honor, the prosecution may have had credible witnesses against his co-defendants, but there has been no evidence identifying Mr. Rue as the person. Well, people walked into the TD Bank and held it up. In fact, we have an alibi witness who says he was actually visiting his family in, or really Ontario that day. Okay, in a case like that, there are cases, and Judge Christie told me himself, where the Crown's case is so lean that you can do that. Hate cases are not that. Unless your position is, I didn't do it. Brian put up all those ideas on my website. It's his fault, not mine. Okay. But it is, that was never the question. There was never any dispute that Leroy St. Germain was the publisher and Dr. James Sears was the writer of most of the so-called defensive passages. So you have to, if you want to make a defense on the basis that the defenses are true, subject matter of public interest, sincerely held religious belief. And then the other important thing is, do these words willfully promote hate. Now, that's the charge. The Supreme Court, trying to cover its bum in this Keister case, said it goes beyond hard dislike or harsh criticism. It has to be active hate and extreme hostility. Okay, that still doesn't help you a lot, but it would be useful to argue over the words. And because of the way they were written and because it's satire, it's a completely different ballgame. Okay, Dean Emery refused to do that. He did a brief, half-hearted cross-examination of the two expert witnesses. He failed to nail them on the fact that even if to their satisfaction, or the first witness's satisfaction, he'd proven that Dr. James Sears' views were anti-Semitic. So what? Criticism of Jews is not the same thing as willfully promoting hatred. And similarly, the ill-dressed feminist lawyer from this part of the country, whose name I forgot if I ever knew it, somebody told that, well, you're not leaving the house looking like that. What does she was wearing? Spaghetti-stained baggy sweatshirt and sweatpants. But anyway, okay, her point was that your word news was filled with anti-feminist, misogynistic stuff. Okay, even if you accept that, that's not the same thing as willfully promoting hatred. You can take a very traditional view of the relationship between the sexes without promoting hatred. At least that would be the argument I would make. Anyway, Dean Emery didn't do that, and then came time to final summation. The Crown went on for over an hour, and I would say they made a fairly logical case. I don't agree with it, but they put a lot of effort into it. Dean Emery's summation was something roughly like this. Well, although it's hate speech, it doesn't rise to the level of breaking the law, and it's satire, and it doesn't go far enough. Well, you don't admit the charge. Yes, Ron Rue. Oh, Rue bought that TD Bank. But
you can't identify him.
Well, yeah. But you're his lawyer. Anyway, it was pretty lame, and I would say what the judge did in his judgment, he simply cherry picked a couple of quotations from the expert witness on anti-Semitism, a couple of quotations from the expert witness on anti-feminism or sexism, put them all together, and so therefore Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain are guilty. Okay, now that was in January. Now, finally, I believe it was the 1st of August, Dr. Sears thought he went into court and he thought he really had it quite well organized, a very extensive brief showing from emails how Dean Emery had refused to follow his instructions. And then he had to come up with expert witnesses, because if you're looking for a mistrial, it's got to be more than just, well, he didn't do it right. Okay, then how would you do it? Well, we scurried around like mad getting expert witnesses. Well, E. Michael Jones, Dr. Tom Sunick. Dr. Tom Sunick, among other things, would testify. He has a good, great background in European literature. He could talk about satire, and he's willing. Michael Hoffman is an expert on Judaism. Being able to talk about the truth, defense of what Dr. Sears wrote. Germar Rudolph, a PhD in chemistry. Well, he earned a PhD. The Max Planck Institute would not give it to him because of his revisionist views, but he has a scientific background. He's published like crazy about the topic. He would talk about the truth about what Norwood News said. I'm missing somebody. A couple of people. We were on. We think we would have. We were going to get Dr. Kenneth McDonald. The truth of what Dr. Sears had written, and then several what we call witnesses of fact. They're not experts, but they could tell you what they experienced. And because we're not quite there yet, but I could. The president, the German organization in Toronto, the Journalism Association. of expellees. These are among the 16 million Germans who were forcibly ethnically cleansed from the East. He represents this group, and he would be able to, as a witness of fact, say the impact of the endless German bashing and the agitation by the Jewish lobby has had a bad effect on the lives of many of my fellow expellees. Many felt guilty. They feel the kids have been turned against them. They find themselves reviled if they identify themselves as Germans, and so on. Anyway, and we had other witnesses planned, but these are the ones that were presented to the judge. And we were trying to guess what he was going to do, which is always a fool's enterprise. The judge was retiring at the end of August, and we thought, well, look, if he lets you get this far, maybe he will give you the writ of mistrial, and then he can wash his hands of it. The trial becomes some of the judge's ticking time bomb next year sometime. Well, I guess we were fooled, because the Judge Richard Blouin said the level of hate here was so dangerous, he would have imposed at least 18 months if he could. It's hard to know whether he meant 18 months on each count, which would be 3.5 years, or 18 months total. But, shucks, he couldn't do it, because he's only allowed to impose a maximum of 6 months on each of the two counts. And the Crown had wanted those sentences to run consecutively. Almost always in a case like this, the sentences are allowed to run concurrently. So, okay, you got 6 months on each count, and it's that 6 months total, not 12. Oh no, this judge gave the absolute maximum he could. So he's a cold-eyed fanatic. He said he uses his point of reference, a case that I'm sure none of you would remember. It's the case of a young skinhead named Solonimir Lelos. When I looked at the date, I thought, holy children, that was 1990? That's over 30 years ago. But anyway, Solonimir probably had too much vodka one night and went out and I think spray painted some choice words and a couple of symbols on a synagogue. I'd say very ill-advisedly, his defense lawyer told him to plead guilty. Well, he did. He apologized to the Jewish community, and he still got a year in jail for vandalism, basically. Which, after the suitable press photos and lots of boo-hoo-hooing and you know, the Nazis are back in town propaganda, sandblasted away. No long-term harm done. I mean, I'm not saying I justify the vandalism, and yes, he should have been. You know, probably should have gone 30 days in jail and maybe paid for the cost of the sandblasting. But he got a brutal sentence, and that's what happens when you plead guilty. There's no margin in it, and there's no margin in apologizing. I mean, unless you really mean it. I knew Solonimir Lelos only very, very vaguely. I have no idea what was in his mind, but you know, going down on your knees and apologizing, it doesn't win you any points. And he was not charged under the hate law. This, I don't think the judge didn't know that in drawing his comparison, or chose to overlook it. He was charged with vandalism. But the sentence was increased because back in the 80s, very ill-advisedly, under pressure from the Jewish lobby, the federal government passed a law whereby if a crime is motivated by hate against privileged groups, your race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, etc., an additional sentence or an increased sentence is necessary. That's how I think Solonimir ended up with a year in jail. Okay, reasoning from that, the judge said, but this was far worse, because that was only spray painting of a building and not that many people would have seen it, whereas your ordinance reached 300,000 people. And in these times, violence could occur. You see, This is the sneaky thing they are doing more and more when they attack you for your views. They say these views could lead to violence. Anything could lead to violence. The views do not recommend violence, do not urge violence, that there is no connection. In fact, I think Dr. Sears was very cleverly pointed out that there's a safety valve. A humorous publication like Your Word Use probably diffuses some people who might otherwise think about violence. But anyway, the judge concluded that this was this merited the strongest possible condemnation, and he gave him a year in prison. So that's the very maximum he could give, which reminded me of another fellow who got the bird accident. Similar, when he was finally deported back to Germany, he was tried under their Section 130 of the German Criminal Code, which is literally it's racial agitation of the masses. That doesn't mean that. Ernst Sundel's writings were all about World War II. Section 130 basically outlaws questioning the Hollywood version of World War II. Ernst Sundel got the max. 5 years in jail, and he served every day of it. So, okay, that was last week. We were not very happy, obviously. Oh, yes, so when that was announced, we had, I would say, half the people in the courtroom were our supporters. There were perhaps a half dozen of the enemy and the press. Well, the press is the enemy, too, so okay. as soon as the press, that sentence was pronounced, a friend of mine who grew up in Eastern Europe got up and yelled at the judge, "That is not right!" Judge said any more outbursts and we'll clear the court. So she left the court crying. And you know, these people who've lived under communism know what it is like. And this is communism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at this point, I didn't see them, but others who were seeing a slightly different place did. Three armed cops had entered the court. You see, they already knew, I'm sure, what the sentence was. And you could hear the clinking, and the clinking were the handcuffs. So Dr. Sears turned around, he was handcuffed, in front of his wife and four-year-old son. He handed his wife his cell phone and his car keys. He said, "I'm keeping my Christian cross." Now, for those people who actually honestly reported, which was, I think, one or two of the media, and of course, our own report, this is very significant, because we're reaching out to a lot of Christians who realize they're not being represented. And that in fact, the Christianity, you know, regardless of, you know, whether you hold pre-Christian views or not, or Buddhist views, Christianity is absolutely held in complete contempt by our cultural Marxist ruling class. So this is a very important symbol. So he was let off. We then went, all of us went, talked very briefly to Leroy's lawyer. I'll leave the Sears case for a second. But they had problems with Leroy. You see, Leroy is a Métis. And because of our absolutely screwball justice system, where we're all equal, well, not exactly all equal. You can get away with twice as much if you're a native person. Because they've got to take into consideration the fact of colonialism, imperialism, reservations,
residential schools.
Residential schools.
That's not so much.
It wouldn't matter, you know, that you may have been a poor boy from Newfoundland, the fisheries are gone, you grew up malnourishing diet and didn't have much of an education. Hey, we don't give you any consideration.
Straight white male privilege.
Yeah, white male privilege should be poor. Anyway, it's total bullshit. But this goes back to the Supreme decision, court decision in Gladue. Gladue was a native who felt that the sentence was too severe. I forget the particulars, but went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sent it back to the sentencing judge, saying that the judge had to take into account colonialism, imperialism, residential schools, and anyway, I think the judge had the sentence. So the Indians still went to jail for a bit, so we've got this absolute Looney Tunes joke of a system. Okay, then that's the poker game we're in, and in this game, the twos are equal to aces, and okay, well, that's the game we'll play. So Leroy had to establish that he was a Métis. And I'm not sure all of what went on behind the scenes, but he thought the whole thing was a joke. But not a joke, but it's ridiculous. But finally, the author, after sentencing Dr. Sears, the judge was very keen on an offer. He said, I used to deal with this when I was a Crown attorney. This would be, the Indians would call it a healing circle, but this is a mediation and reconciliation. And he says, it sometimes works. So the parties have to be willing. So the complainants, those would be some women, I guess, and the Jewish organizations would get together with Leroy, and he would listen to how they'd been wounded and impacted by the words of your war news. And he would, I guess he would explain his point of view. Well, I'll tell you, I don't think Leroy St. Germain, even in his music days, ever walked as tall as when he told his lawyer, fuck them. No, I'm not going to sit down with those people and have a cluster fuck. Hitting my words on this, but I'm not going to do that. Let the judge do whatever he's going to do. Well, this tossed the hand grenade with the pin out of it back in the Mr. Justice Richard Bruin's hands. So what he came down with today was, I don't think they have the stuff to send a native person to prison for basically publishing jokes.
Yeah.
And we're hoping eventually, as we get the word out internationally, that the Canadian courts can be seen to be almost prepared to put an old man in jail for jokes, and prepared to put a medical doctor in jail for a year for jokes. This is the sort of thing you would expect, maybe in Cuba or Red China. Or under Robert Mugabe, there was a law in Zimbabwe that you could not, it was actually worth 2 years in jail for making fun of the president's name. Now that's not Mugabe, he was the prime minister. The president was a man named Canaan Banana. And there were many people in the Rhodesia, in the Zimbabwean press, who would laugh about Canaan Banana, even more so because he was eventually convicted for being a notorious kitty diddler. Yeah, so Canaan Banana, ha ha, joke. We have descended to that level. After the sentencing of Dr. Sears, we went down to the main level of this building, which is the old Edens College Street, College and Young in Toronto. And there the press ambushed us. Well, there was really nobody to speak for Dr. Sears, so I gave them a news reaction. And
that's in City TV.
Oh, that's City.
Yeah.
That Iranian was just vile, snapping off at me quotations out of context from your war news. You saw my answer.
He handled it well. He said, no, that's satire. He said more than once. Yeah.
And of course, they helpfully trailed us as those of us who supported Dr. Sears went down this escalator to the food court. You know, trying to get as many people in the camera as possible, including the lady who had said that as well. What Dr. Sears had wanted to anticipate the possibility that he would be sentenced to prison. So he had instructed a new lawyer to file a notice of appeal. See, once you're convicted, you cannot get bail for to pursue an appeal until you have filed a notice. That doesn't mean the whole appeal, but you're saying, we're going to appeal, and here's the formal notice of the court. I'm not quite sure what happened. I mean, lawyers are just notoriously slow, except when it comes to sending out the bill. And the justice system is hopelessly clogged. Anyway, Dr. Sears had hoped to be out last Friday, but that was not to be. So the bail hearing could not be heard until this past Tuesday. So he spent 4.5 days in prison. The bail was ferociously posed by the Crown. Now you think, a non-violent case. He's not a flight prospect. He's got a wife and child in Toronto. So why would you oppose bail? Well, he's a very dangerous man. It is worse than pedophilia. And apparently, I wasn't there, so I'm getting this secondhand. But the Crown argued that this was like pedophilia.
that the mere possession of your word used was like pedophilia. See, contrary to what some people think, possession of so-called hate propaganda is not a crime. It's only the willful promotion. And there's a gift. Well, promotion of whatever kiddie porn is a crime. I'm sorry, possession, mere possession is a crime. The Crown was actually trying to argue that, and apparently it went back and forth, back and forth. The judge finally granted Dr. Sears a bail for $500, which is not a big deal, but he is not allowed to express his views to the media. Now, I think that's it. And he's to take down the Your War News website. That has been done. So the next step, though, will be to go back to court next week or the week thereafter to seek an amendment of the bail conditions. And this is what many people in the movement have failed to do in the past. Like a market, what do you call it, a haven. You know, that's their position today. Well, you go back to another judge a couple weeks from now and try to haggle them now. Terry Tremaine was initially barred from owning any device, a computer or a cell phone, that could access the internet. That was his original bail condition. Well, he can't live that way. He went back to the courts five times. Eventually, his bail condition was he could not go on, post on Stormfront, and there was perhaps one other site. It was a huge difference. And so the battle goes on. And then next week, another lawyer will go to court to try to get Leroy sprung from from house arrest. So that's the Your War News case. I think it's extremely important that we get this information out as far as widely as possible. You know, our own lists, various websites. I've done a video with Brian shortly after the incision. We've got to rub their noses in it. This is Canada today, a country that does not believe in free speech. And this is a back issue of Your War News. And you know, I think what the Crown was arguing, in a sense, makes a point. They are terrified of ideas. And they, I think, are terrified of being laughed at, and they truly deserve the contemptuous laughter of free men. When you're here, a couple of other cases, I don't have to take up too much of your time, but it just demonstrates how fragile freedom is in this country. This will be kind of down your alley, Brian. A kind of pale-looking.
I swear I didn't know she was 15 years old.
She was 12.
No, you didn't know it was. You thought it was a he, but it turned out to be a she.
Imagine the comments coming up at you now. See,
yeah. Anyway, a relatively frail-looking Anglo-Saxon retiree went public about a month ago about something that had happened to him at an Ottawa park, and there was a dragon race festival in one part of the park, and he had been with a group of Falun Gong practitioners that used another part of the park for their, I think, like exercises or something. And he had taken the child of one of these fellows to a public washroom near where the dragon race was, and he was wearing a Falun Gong t-shirt that had an absolutely innocuous message about something like peace and love. I mean, it wasn't confrontational or anything. Anyway, some Bossy Boots organizer told him that no t-shirts like that would be allowed in the park. It's a public park. And if he didn't leave, he and the rest of the Falun Gong people would be put out of the park. He'd see them. Well, not only did he not have the power to do that, but this event was co-sponsored. It was actually under the auspices of Tim Hortons, and it received considerable funding from the Red Chinese Embassy in Ottawa and other groups. So this created a bit of of a kerfuffle in Ottawa of Red Chinese interference in our domestic life. I mean, these people were not even protesting the dragon race. They had nothing to do with the dragon race. It was a man with a t-shirt accompanying a kid to go to a public washroom. And this shows how absolutely servile some Canadians are in supporting tyranny. The Red Chinese, of course, would like Falun Gong banned in Canada as they are in China. So that was, I thought, one of those incidents that didn't show at least a few Canadians in a very good light. You know, we're so weak, and freedom of expression means so little to some people. Well, then, last weekend, supporters of Maxime Bernier rented billboard space in a number of places across Canada. I know in Calgary and Edmonton,
Vancouver,
Halifax, Quebec City, East End, Toronto, and probably other places. They had a budget of $60,000. And the billboards, a picture of Maxime Bernier, something about the People's Party of Canada, and then the slogan, cut mass immigration.
Say no
to mass immigration. That was it. And it was roughly the same in the French version. Okay. Well, that, of course, caused the usual suspects to go hysterical. The immigration lobby and various others. So they had an online petition which gathered 11,000 signatures, which really isn't not a whole lot. The billboards were owned by Patterson Outdoor Advertising, which is part of Jimmy Patterson's huge empire. Initially, they said, "Well, the views on advertising and the views of the people who pay for it take their objections up down." Okay, that's the right answer. Well, that lasted all of 24 hours. And by Sunday, the word was on Monday, the signs would be coming down, and Patterson Outdoor Advertising was in full pathetic groveling retreat. In no way endorsed these views. Well, nobody expects them to endorse these views. You buy a billboard advertising for sleazy Joe's used cars. Patterson. Has no opinion on sleazy Joe's used cars or whatever the business or the cause is. People buy advertising space. They're responsible for what they say. Patterson was sorry if it offended anybody on, just groveling.
Did he say that himself first?
No, this is the spokesman for Patterson Outdoor Advertising. But it would be nice if Jimmy Patterson actually would speak up and box the guy's ears and fire him, but I don't think that will happen. So there were some really great pictures in the Canadian media of workers actually ripping down strips of these billboards. On so many levels, it's pathetic and evil. It's standing in the way of paid free expression. The Patterson wasn't giving Maxime Bernier supporters anything. They paid for it. They were being denied an opportunity to reach potential voters with their message, which potential voters might ignore. Or
so did they just agree to allow them to take them down?
They didn't know. That's Patterson's property. They can do what they want.
Well, it interferes with democracy.
More importantly, it interferes with democracy. And this is a repeat of what happened to Faith Goldie in Toronto. She ran for mayor and got a respectable 13% of the vote. She was shunned by almost all the media, but she managed to raise, I think, about 50,000 shekels, and was going to advertise on I think it was CP24. It's an old news channel, and this was owned by Bell Media. Bell Media at first accepted the ad, and then rejected it, and she went to court and did not prevail. I think she was extremely badly advised because she went to the wrong court, believe it or not. But Bell Media just said the message was divisive. Well, I've read the message. It was extremely moderate about, it was not, it was against illegal immigration, about illegal immigration, immigrants having housing while poor Torontonians are on the street, and other things that she was going to do. It was really pretty moderate. But Bell Media, like Patterson Outdoor Advertising, I think a part of an element in corporate Canada that knows how much anger there is about the messed up immigration policies of this country, which they support, and with which they are in cahoots. The head of a fellow by the name of Goldie Heyer. Now you may think that Goldie's a woman. No, Goldie is actually a guy. He's the head of, I believe, of the Canadian Manufacturers Association. I think. And he was one of the big business lobby groups. He put out a urgent statement back in May, urging the political leaders not to make immigration controversial in this election. In other words, do what you always did. You all agree on massive third world immigration, large numbers, and understood but never said the replacement of the European founding settler people. You may disagree a little bit around the edges. The conservatives may say we should have more people with skills. And the NDP will say we need more refugees. And the liberal supporters will say, we need mommy and daddy and grandpa to come over. Yeah, minor disagreements around the edges. But you're all in favor of the main large numbers and replace the white man plan. They won't put it quite like that. Okay, I think Goldie Heyer, who has his ear to the ground, knows there's a lot of discontent. In fact, Goldie Heyer is actually part of a business group that has been urging Justin Trudeau to buy into a plan to have our population 100 million people by the end of the century. In fact, it shouldn't be 340,000 a year. We need a minimum of 500,000 to grow the economy. Geez, if a population of 100 million meant prosperity, Bangladesh should be the promised land. We'd all be heading over to Bangladesh for a minute. Anyway, Goldie Heyer has skin in the game, so to speak. So he was urging the politicians to cool it on immigration, because the conservatives have been making some noises, at least about the illegals pouring across the board. And in Andrew Scheer's immigration statement about 6 weeks ago was very, very disappointing. But the only good thing was, yes, he would stop the illegals. Okay, that's good. But then he said, the problem with what the liberals have done is that they're turning people against immigration. That's a bad thing. No, Andrew, you've been drinking the wrong Kool-Aid. And then he said, we need immigration to grow the economy because we have an aging workforce. And I thought, Andrew, did you graduate from grade school? Yes. The baby boomers are getting older and are retiring, but they've got children and grandchildren who are hitting the workforce. It's not like once we baby boomers are retired, there's nobody to do the job. In fact, there's high youth unemployment today. He's talking twaddle. So, I don't think Goldie Heyer has to worry too much about anger, but he does have to worry about a man from the boss. Maxime Bernier. I don't personally know Maxime's views completely, but I think he, as Hank Williams used to say, saw the light. I hear when he was in Vancouver here a few months back, he gave you a rousing talk about getting rid of dairy marketing boards. I think even with toothpicks, you'd have trouble suppressing your.
Yeah, it was good, so I was there. Yeah. He shook my hand, though.
No, I'm not saying that Maxime doesn't believe that. That's a very passionate thing with him. I think Maxime is a French-Canadian nationalist. He comes from an area of Quebec, the most country, which is very different from other parts of French Canada. They're very entrepreneurial, these people.
Where is he from?
The most areas, which is south of Quebec City.
Oh.
Okay. He made several comments when he ran for leadership that made you think he just might get it. He said things like, we have to be, we don't want too much multiculturalism because it will break up unity. And we don't want so much immigration that it will replace our culture. And kind of these vague statements, but I thought, you know, but Maxine gets it. And also Maxine comes from a kind of part of the country where you need a search warrant to find a non-white. I mean, he comes from a very homogeneous part of the province of Quebec. In fact, Quebec, with the exception of Montreal and just certain extent Quebec City, is very, very traditional. So this would not strike him as bad or wrong. Anyway, between the time you heard him in Vancouver a few months back and the time he unveiled his immigration policy in Mississauga, on the 25th of July, he has gone through a big change. I won't speculate what the change was, but he now gets it. Well, let's say he gets 80% of it, or maybe, and he delivered a fantastic immigration platform. Number one, we'll stop the illegals. But he has an idea, build a fence. And the audience went crazy. Build a wall! Build a wall! Never mind a bloody fence, build a wall! And you know, people are into it. He gets it. Then he said, the numbers are too large. He said, now people heard this in different ways. I heard him to say between 100 and 125,000. Some people thought he said between 100 and 150,000. Okay, he would cut the immigration tolls by more than 50%. And he made a very good point, courtesy of two gentlemen from this city, former Reform Party member of Parliament, Horst Grubel, and a researcher, Patrick Brady, who had an article in the National Post last week about just this issue. He said, immigration is costing us. Now, his figures are way out of date. He said between $17 and $23 billion a year. That's what Grubel came up with in 2011. He has since amended that with, you know, the more numbers that have come in. It's costing us about $40 billion a year based on this. What do the immigrants who have come in since 1985, what does that cohort put into the tax pot? CPP, income tax deductions, sales tax, property tax, etc. What do they take out in terms of services? They take out $40 billion a year more than they put in. So when you hear the slogan, we need immigration to grow the economy, you're hearing bullshit.
That's over $1,000 for every Canadian.
It's a fortune. This is not a winner. This is a loser. In fact, buried in their 2011 report was the one line that were immigration to be halted, the lot of the poorest Canadians would improve. There'd be more money for them. There would actually be more jobs available for them. It's not a very well-organized report. It is good material, but it was not very well highlighted. Anyway, Maxime Bernier was relying on that. Good point. The first time that sacred cow had been challenged. Immigration doesn't grow the economy. As long as you've got unemployment, it's a detriment, or large-scale immigration is. Then he said we're going to need to concentrate on skills. Okay, well, conservatives would say that too. But far fewer refugees. He said we can feel very sorry for refugees, but Canadians should basically write a check and support them abroad. Good point. Then he said if we are going to take in any refugees, we should take in people who are genuinely persecuted. For instance, Christians and Yazidis from Muslim countries. The audience went crazy again, applauding. This is absolutely heresy. The liberals would not even touch that. They don't want to discriminate in favor of Christians. No. This is really positive. Then he borrowed
This is Paul Vaughan, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do. I won't be doing it tonight, but with the Maple Leaf forever. Back again tomorrow. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.